study, as you can see here. This is a climate change study. We have different precipitation regimes, temperatures. We have bare soils, plant monocultures, and mixed communities. And we're using this collaboration between soil, I study soil microorganisms, and people who study plant gene expression and plant ecophysiology to try to get at the biotic response to global change. We start out with some assumptions, things that we've already discovered about nitrogen cycling. Plants in temperate ecosystems are nitrogen limited, and microbial nitrogen processing controls nitrogen availability. So we hypothesize that microbial nitrogen processing influences plant allocation, and we're looking at this not just at a process rate scale, but also using genomics and transcriptomics. And the reason for that is these are all really complex processes. We're trying to measure them in the environment. We have so many environmental variables that come into play that it's hard to say that something is actually due to a change in an organism itself. So by looking at gene expression, we can identify that the organism itself is actually changing what it's doing and the rate of the process on purpose. Also, climate change alters microbial nitrogen process rates and plant allocation. So this study gives us a mechanistic basis for changes in ecosystem processes. Instead of a black box study where we change climate conditions and just look at different outputs, we're actually looking at the mechanism behind these to try to understand what's really going on, give us more information. Nitrogen is very important for plant health, because plants in temperate ecosystems are nitrogen limited. And we all care about plants because we either eat plants or we eat something that eats plants. Also, water quality is important. Nitrate is a water contaminant. And global change is increasing nitrogen deposition. Also, because nitrogen is so important, we know a lot about it because we've studied it for over a century now. We have identified key processes. We have enzyme assays for related enzymes, and we have genetic information so that we can quantify gene expression. And grasslands are very important because not only are they easier to do a study like this in because I'm looking at annual grasslands, but also grasslands cover 20% of the terrestrial earth surface. This is the nitrogen cycle, and I'm going to talk a lot about this conversion from organic nitrogen to ammonium, which is known as either ammonification or nitrogen mineralization, and then the conversion from ammonium to nitrate, which is nitrification, and these are both microbially mediated processes. Ammonia tends to stick around more in the soil, whereas nitrate is either leached, contaminating water, or denitrified. Denitrification and nitrification both evolve nitrous oxide and NO, which are harmful gases. Nitrous oxide is a harmful greenhouse gas 300 times more powerful than carbon dioxide on a per molecule basis. So to get at biotic response, basically we all have DNA, and all organisms have DNA, and the DNA dictates what we are capable of doing, what processes we can do, and what we will do. DNA is then transcribed into RNA, which then is translated into a protein, which becomes an enzyme that does a process. So transcription is the first place where an organism can change its regulation, and it's the first place that the organism can go towards making more, increasing a process rate or decreasing a process rate. So environmental characteristics can lead to changes in gene expression or transcripts right here, this step. And then that will correlate to a change in enzyme activity, which then combined again with environmental characteristics should give us our process rates. for this study, we're looking at nitrogen. We're looking at this conversion from organic nitrogen into ammonium, and we're measuring actual rates of nitrogen mineralization. Then for the conversion from ammonium to nitrate, we're measuring the enzyme activity using nitrification potential and the actual process rate, gross nitrification, the gross rate. Ammonium, nitrate, the actual processes here should all contribute to the RNA for Rubisco, which is a gene an enzyme that plants make that helps them in photosynthesis. It requires a lot of nitrogen. So the transcripts for Rubisco then should lead us to the activity of Rubisco and the actual rate of photosynthesis. Can we actually see this, though, is another problem. And can we see changes with climate change? So this is one of the first steps. Nitrification potential should be related to ammonium. Nitrification potential is, the enzyme activity, which for a microorganism, this is a microbial process, is a sum of recent activity, because these organisms are only doing this one process, and if they do a lot of it, then they'll have more cells that can do more of it. And we see that there is a strong relationship between nitrification potential and ammonium concentration. And you might be surprised that it's an inverse relationship, but remember that if there's more nitrification potential, that means there's more nitrification. Ammonium is the substrate, nitrate is the end product. So where there's a higher nitrification potential, the ammonium is being converted faster. Okay? So there's less of it. And under low rainfall and high rainfall, we can see rain one. This is the low rainfall, the red one. And the blue one is the high rainfall. And as we get more data, we'll be able to see if this is a more significant relationship. Right now, it looks like it may become one when we get this year's data together. But I'm not surprised to see that this is flatter, because nitrification is also an aerobic process. And in the high rainfall treatment, I think that we're seeing oxygen limitation. So that could explain that. Also, by looking at our different plant communities, we can start to ask if the plants have a different relationship. And it has been demonstrated in the past that plants like Avena barbata may actually be increasing nitrification rates. So that's another thing that we're looking at. This is nitrification potential versus nitrogen mineralization, which should be another controller. Nitrogen mineralization is often considered a proxy for nitrogen availability. And we can see that there is a positive relationship. And interestingly, for the low and ambient rainfall, this is really clear. But for the high rainfall, it's either dampened or not significant. And again, I think this shows that it's not the nitrogen availability here, but actually the oxygen limitation that's controlling the nitrification potential. Because the oxygen availability would impact the availability of the community to grow up and have a higher rate of nitrification potential. So here we have the actual process that we've measured, gross nitrification versus the nitrification potential. And I know it's messy, but this is ecological data. And in the low rain and the high rain, we're seeing a relationship, but then in the ambient rain, we wonder if there is. And one of the things that we really want to get into with this study is it is different under different rainfall conditions, what the controller is. And, okay, 3 minutes, so. Oh, these graphs, I'm sorry, did not come out in this transfer. But when we look at Rubisco regulation, the best determinant was nitrification potential. The same thing was true for Rubisco activity. The best determinant was nitrification potential. However, when we look at Rubisco activity versus the actual transcript for Rubisco, which is what we think should be the most related, we see no relationship whatsoever. So it's interesting that we can see a relationship. They're both controlled by the same thing, yet we're not actually seeing a relationship between the two of them. And I think that this is a problem that we have because all of our assays are so variable, and we're getting better with all of these techniques. but they do require a lot of data and they're not perfect. We have a lot of other factors that come to play, and this is just preliminary data. Okay. So climate change does alter controlling factors. Under low precipitation conditions, we found that Rubisco activity was explained actually best by ammonium, even though overall it was by nitrification potential. And under high precipitation conditions, Rubisco activity was actually explained best by nitrification potential. And also, the relationship between any two variables can also change with climate change. So studying enzymes and regulation as well as process rates may be used to demonstrate the biotic response to change. We also need to be aware that lags can occur between regulation and enzyme activity adjustment. Maybe if we look at the Rubisco transcripts today and the enzyme activity of Rubisco next week, we'll find a stronger correlation. And global change either will have or is already having a large impact on nitrogen cycling in grasslands. This work was a summation of the work of many, many, many people. These are just a few. This is a big collaboration between my lab, the Firestone Lab, which is soil microbial ecology. The Anderson Lab is doing a lot of work on gene expression and microbial community structure. The Ackerley Lab is responsible for the ecophysiology data. And the Torn Lab is giving us a lot of the adapic factors and gas flux measurements.
Sarah, we have time for about two questions.
Yes.
Well, your last plot showed a lot of scattering with the Rubisco activity. Is that a function of how you express the data in terms of maybe leaf area bases or gravimetric bases then? Did you get this answer?
You know, I have looked at it a few different ways. I believe that it's normalized for the leaf and the protein. And I just put this data together, but I'd like to talk about it more with the plant people who've taken these measurements, because I have some of the same questions. And sometimes I've seen relationships that I think are a function of how they're looking at it versus total soluble protein or not. And I think that the Rubisco activity is actually the most representative one. So I think this is legitimate. I can get a better relationship with data that I think is not legitimate, but I chose that. Yes?
Your manipulations focus on precipitation, but of course climate change will also lead to changes in temperature and in CO2 concentration. Do you have reason to believe that these two factors are going to be less important than precipitation, that precipitation is the overriding factor controlling nitrogen availability?
That's a great question. We actually do have a temperature treatment as well, but there have been studies that combine a lot of these factors. The truth is that we can't do everything, and given that, given the foci that those of us on the project have, I think that precipitation is the one that we can best get a handle on right now. We know that precipitation also shows obvious changes in soil moisture, which has an impact on diffusion and also on ammonium availability, therefore. So we're all focused on that because we think that we'll be able to see the most changes and get the most spread in the data in terms of enzyme activity and gene expression that's directly from just the precipitation treatment. I think that the temperature experiments have to run a lot longer. Also, the carbon dioxide experiments, they found that there's a big difference in the first couple years versus a much longer running experiment. And this is only a few year experiment. So.